two buses sent by Texas Governor Greg Abbott, another Republican facing re-election this November, dropped off migrants in a Washington neighborhood, not far from Vice President Kamala Harris's official residence on Thursday, 15th of September. One Venezuelan migrant who arrived at Martha's Vineyard identified himself as Luis, a 27-year-old, and said he and nine relatives were promised a flight to Massachusetts, along with shelter, support for 90 days, help with work permits, and English lessons. He said they were surprised when their flight landed on Martha's Vineyard. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said Republican governors were using migrants as political pawns. Several Democrats, including Charlie Crist, Ron DeSantis' opponent in Florida, and California Governor Gavin Newsom, have called on federal authorities to investigate the matter. Britain's Guardian newspaper explains more about this story. Attorneys representing Venezuelan asylum seekers flown thousands of miles to an affluent holiday island in Massachusetts at the behest of Republican governors have formally requested authorities open a criminal investigation, claiming the victims were induced to board airplanes and cross state lines under false pretenses. Lawyers for Civil Rights, a Boston-based group representing 30 of the 48 people flown from Texas to Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts on Wednesday, 14th of September, said individuals working in concert with state officials, including the Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, made numerous false promises to the migrants, including of work opportunities, schooling for their children, and immigration assistance, in order to induce them to travel. According to Lawyers for Civil Rights, which is providing pro bono legal assistance to the asylum seekers, the Venezuelans were duped in what was essentially a coordinated political stunt targeting vulnerable people based on their race and country of origin. Those flown to the holiday island of Martha's Vineyard included women and children as young as 2 years old. Lawyers for Civil Rights has written to the U.S. Attorney Rachel Rollins and the Massachusetts Attorney General, Maura Healey, requesting they open a criminal investigation, as we strongly believe that criminal laws were broken by the perpetrators of this stunt. In a statement, Lawyers for Civil Rights said, "This cowardly political stunt has placed our clients in peril. Upon arrival, numerous individuals had to be rushed to hospital in need of medical care. Some now have immigration hearings as early as Wednesday, 21st of September, thousands of miles away." The story has also been covered by Al Jazeera's website from a different angle. Massachusetts state officials announced migrants were flown to the U.S. island of Martha's Vineyard recently in what critics have denounced as a cruel political stunt by Republican lawmakers are being moved to a military base. Approximately 50 migrants, including about half a dozen children, boarded buses on Friday, 16th of September, to head to the ferry to Cape Cod, where Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker said they would be housed temporarily at Joint Base Cape Cod. The group was flown to Martha's Vineyard without warning on Wednesday night, 14th of September, as part of an escalating effort by Republican governors to call attention to what they view as U.S. President Joe Biden's failure to secure the U.S.-Mexico border amid record attempted crossings. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has taken credit for transporting the migrants from Texas to Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts, though the legal basis for the Florida government to round up migrants in a different state remained unclear. The migrants said they had recently been admitted into the United States on a fast-track permit known as humanitarian parole, after leaving Venezuela and had been staying at a shelter in San Antonio, Texas. Rachel Self, a Boston immigration lawyer who gave legal assistance to some of the migrants, said they had been lured onto planes under false pretenses.
Economic Divide.
Here's the UK mini budget, but the projections are wrong. I'll stick with it anyways. No, wait, I may have it wrong. Let's make amendments. That's right. That's the way and the state of the economy played out in front of the world by the UK and Prime Minister Liz Truss, who stands on extremely shaky grounds. And just as we were recording this program, we got news that Jeremy Hunt reversed almost the entire income tax break for millions. Hi, I'm Kavitawe. This is Economic Divide. Coming up, UK economy, strikes, possible blackouts, plunging currency. How much more can it go wrong for the UK? Then, taking a look at what has been called a mini budget disaster. That's what you presented, and that's what happened. Then U-turns after U-turn to slash bills with windfall tax, and then resignations for Prime Minister Liz Truss. And then we take a look at Europe's economy. How's Europe doing? Well, recession in Europe, energy rationing is occurring. There's suggestions of blackouts, suggestions of gas to be rationed. And of course, we're taking a look at a global economic recession that's looming in the horizon.
UK's economy is facing a gloomy outlook. Britain's economy looks set to go into a recession, as data shows it unexpectedly shrank in August. A government report shows the country's gross domestic product in August decreased 0.3% from July. Britain's economy is hit by the cost of living crisis and rocketing energy bills. Gloomy news comes amid market turmoil after Britain's recent debt-fueled budget. The mini-budget, as it's called, unveiled by the Chancellor, included tax cuts to boost growth in the short term, but it has faced a barrage of criticisms over its long-term effects.
There's no point trying to hide it. Everyone can see what has happened. The Tories went on a borrowing spree, sending mortgage rates through the roof. They are skyrocketing by £500 a month. And for nearly 2 million homeowners, their fixed-rate deals are coming to an end next year. They're worried sick, and everybody in this house knows it. They won't forgive. They won't forget, and nor should they. When will she stop ducking responsibility, do the right thing, and reverse her kamikaze budget, which is causing so much pain?
The International Monetary Fund says it will fuel rising prices, warning the cuts would, quote, complicate the fight against soaring prices. The IMF says a high inflation is likely to be a permanent feature of the UK's economy in the coming years. Only Slovakia, out of the eurozone, is set to see a higher inflation. Inflation is expected to peak at about 11.3% before the end of the year in the UK. The IMF expects price rises will average at about 9% for the next 2 years. That is far above the target of 2% set by the Bank of England. Yet, Prime Minister Liz Truss is utterly failing to tackle the cost of living crisis overall, since the mini budget will have only one kind of growth, and that is growth in the gap between the rich and the poor. On the other hand, Truss has pledged military aid worth billions of pounds for Ukraine, as the UK is suffering from the cost of living crisis. Premiership is coming under intense scrutiny, so much so that there are talks of her being forced to resign.
Let's get some analysis into our segment here. We are going to have Akib Mahmood join us for our first segment of the Q&A, a geopolitical analyst from London. Akib Mahmood, welcome. The package that UK's Prime Minister Liz Truss introduced, obviously facing a lot of criticism. She has now fired the former Exchequer Kwarteng. One of the critiques by many of the economists, that is, they said that this would lead to greater inequality. Why are there so many problems with this so-called mini-budget?
Yeah, so essentially, Liz Truss owes her premiership to groups like hedge fund managers and corporate bankers, people of that ilk, who are part of a super rich clique and form an ultra elite group that has essentially taken over the Tory party. And those are the people that she was trying to please when she introduced this mini budget and the tax cuts therein. Obviously, the markets understood that this unfunded tax cut is not going to do anything to combat rising inflation or lack of growth in the economy or income inequality. The idea that this was going to be a trickle-down economics was frankly laughable, because all of this extra wealth that would have been generated for these super rich people would just have ended up in their bank accounts, making them extra money.
Okay. Chief UK economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics, Samuel Toombs, now joins us. Samuel Toombs, welcome. The Bank of England intervening in the government bond market, buying some time, basically. Isn't this a temporary solution to UK's bigger economic problems?
We've got through a rocky couple of days for the economy. The Bank of England has now intervened in the government bond market and has bought a couple of weeks' worth of time and stability. It can't continue with its bond buying program indefinitely. I think that ultimately that would end up being quite inflationary. But as this is a temporary targeted intervention that's set to last in the bond market for only a couple of weeks, I think that it's a credible action that won't boost inflation. But we do really need to see now the government grow up, look at the outlook in the financial markets and change course. It clearly has lost trust and needs to start rebuilding that quickly. And that requires it, I think, to both take greater control of government borrowing, but also set out some credible economic and fiscal forecasts to justify some of the decisions it's making. We need that independent oversight for the OBR once again. And once we get that, we will hopefully start to rebuild some credibility, and that'll ease some of the pressures in the financial and economic system.
But not pressure on the pound. What about the pound? What's going to happen to its value?
Well, I think the pound is going to have to be sacrificed in order to protect the economy. At the moment, the pound's value is based on an assumption that the Bank of England will increase interest rates all the way to 6% early next year. But I think that's simply implausible. That would entail too much pain for households and businesses, and you would see issues with financial stability because so many of those households and businesses would be struggling to make those interest repayments on their loans. And so I think it's much more likely that the Bank of England accepts that sterling weakens a bit further as a consequence of not raising interest rates too dramatically. And the consequences of that is that we see a further wave of inflation that affects us all. That will be the price that I think the Bank of England will be willing to pay in order to prevent a financial crisis.
It's time now for our InfoNews section of the program. This is where we take a look at other economic news from around the world. Our first item regards Iran. Iran has a new energy plan that it has introduced. It's calling for more joint projects in Eurasia, and it is urging to improve infrastructure. It is necessary to create a joint investment fund to strengthen cooperation in the energy sector in Eurasia, is the announcement made by Iran. It also said that we can establish a joint energy consortium with the participation of both public and private companies. So Iran on the move with its business, ventures, this being in the energy field. Next up, we are going to take a look at a very important conference. This is regarding Chinese economy, of which Xi has made many statements in his Chinese Communist Party conference. He has also said that the economy sees beautiful life in Chinese nationalism and in control. Now, the Chinese President Xi Jinping has presided at this point over a new era in which it has prioritized political control over economic development. And at this point, he has delivered in his speech the rising living standards for 1.4 billion Chinese people. And he's doing that as the economy is confronting, at this point, the stiffest challenges in decades, from COVID to, of course, the world economy slowing down. Next up, a very important development regarding Lebanon and Israel, in which the gas deal was signed. It was called the historic agreement between both of these longtime foes, as some have described it. It has opened the door to offshore energy exploration, but not so fast. There are some sticking points. The deal, first of all, it has set a border between Lebanon and Israeli waters. This is the first time that has happened. And it's largely along a demarcation line referred to as Line 23. Now, Israel retains full rights to develop the Kurdish field. This is while Lebanon retains full rights in Kana, but it has a caveat there. It's rather lengthy, so we're going to leave it at that. Maybe we'll do a program on that. Who knows? Next up, take a look at Australia and the poverty in that country. 1 in 8 people there are living in poverty as the cost of living pressuring people in terms of the way that they're living. Now, this is while Australia is one of the wealthiest countries in the world, yet 1 in 8 people and 1 in 6 children live below the poverty line. Overall, 3.3 million people in Australia desperately are struggling to pay the bills and to put food on the table. There are about 761,000 children there who are denied a good start to life as a result. Those were some of the news that we picked.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
In order to get an idea of what happened in the UK when it comes to the so-called mini-budget, it might be a good idea to take a look at the timeline to see what actually transpired, what went down. Well, first, Truss's now former finance minister, Kwasi Kwarteng. He came in at September 23rd and announced this tax cut, which included £45 billion of unfunded tax cuts and huge increases in government borrowing. So that happened. Next up, September 26th. We're looking at how the sterling and the British government bonds went into free fall. The pound plunged to a record low against the dollar, and the British bond prices collapsed. Next, the Bank of England entered the scene. It promised to buy as much government debt in order to restore order, earmarking £65 billion for this, but it ended purchasing £17.8 billion. Well, the Prime Minister Liz Truss was being blasted for her mini-plan right and left, but she had remained silent until this date, September 29th. 6 days after it was presented, sticking to her plan. Then October 3, however, a U-turn, she would reverse the plan cut to the highest rate of income tax, one of many reversals and U-turns which would dodge her in the days after the 6th of October. Brought with it action by Bank of England again, which said it would expand the program of daily bond purchases. Whether it would work or not was the question. Well, just a day later, U-turn number 2, no plans to reverse the tax cuts, in which Truss said that she would not reverse the vast tax cuts or reduce public spending. And a couple days later, boom, Truss sacks the finance or Chancellor of the Exchequer, Kwarteng, raising the corporation tax to 25%, not freeze it at 19%, with public spending to grow less rapidly. And that brings us to this question, which many Brits and analysts and officials are asking. Is Truss fit for the premiership?
No way. Nowhere near. They need to do a lot more, but who knows what they're going to do, to be honest, because the situation looks like it's just getting worse and worse and worse.
Awful, obviously. I mean, the people that are poor right now, that are on lower incomes, they're struggling with their heating and all their bills. Everything's gone up. Why on earth would they be cutting it for the people in a higher income bracket? It's ridiculous. London's getting worse. England's getting worse, to be honest. So, yeah, it's a stupid move, a dumb move, obviously.
Okay, hope all of that sunk in. Let's get an analysis. Akib Mahmood rejoins us. He is a geopolitical analyst who rejoins us from London. All right, Akib Mahmood, welcome back. Taking a look at what the World Economic Forum's latest chief economist's outlook has presented. They've come out with economic discontent, which is not something unusual. At this point, we're looking at that across almost all European countries. Protests are coming out. Aren't European politicians and leaders worried that their continued policies against Russia in particular and this war in Ukraine, which is led by the U.S., will lead to their economic destruction?
Well, if politicians in Europe aren't worried, then they should be worried because, as I said before, you can look at the example of Italy, where a right-wing government has come to power, where a nationalistic fervour is being whipped up. And this is what happens in these kind of situations where the economy is on a downturn and traditional politicians, liberal politicians, they don't have the answers that people are looking for. And they tend to go towards far-right or right-wing rhetoric. People tend to fall for that. As far as the politicians in the UK are concerned, they seem to be enthralled to this kind of media narrative that they cannot take a step back, and the media hype is pushing this war in Ukraine, which is almost to the point of nuclear war and nuclear destruction for both sides. And that's something that policymakers in UK and Europe will have to deal with. That's something that they're going to have to step back from very quickly, because the economic situation demands from the people are not going to be helpful in this situation. Europe is not free from the economic grip of what's going on in Ukraine, and Europe is suffering for that. And the people of Europe and UK are going to be demanding that very soon that this war ends. However it ends, they will want to end it. So the politicians need to come up with something before things get out of hand and lead to social unrest or lead to a kind of far-right nationalistic narrative taking over of protectionism and dealing with Putin on any terms instead of equal terms or showing him lesser or in any way.
All right, let's bring back Samuel Toombs. He's the chief UK economist at Pantheon on microeconomics. Samuel Toombs, lots of pressure on Liz Truss. What do you think is going to happen to her?
There must be a lot of political pressure on the Chancellor and the Prime Minister within their own party. And indeed, the Conservatives Party conference next week could well be a flashpoint for further protests by party members and by MPs. And of course, Liz Truss's position is somewhat vulnerable because well less than half of Conservative MPs voted for her in the final round of voting. So many did agree with Rishi Sunak, who does appear to have been somewhat vindicated by recent events and his warnings that unfunded tax cuts would be damaging for the public finances and the economy at large. And I think certainly there will be a lot of internal pressure on the leadership now within the Conservative Party to change course, given that opinion polls look pretty bleak for the Conservatives at the moment.
The UK government is now under pressure to help families suffering from high prices. Prime Minister Liz Truss is vowed to help struggling Brits, but it's widely believed that her neoliberal policies will only exacerbate the socio-economic crisis in the UK. The Bank of England has already taken an emergency action to stabilize the country's financial markets. Concerns are rising over possible social unrest in the UK and other European countries over rising energy bills and inflation rates. Analysts warn that economic discontent is now a reality across the continent. For ordinary citizens, buying bare essentials is becoming more difficult, and there are warnings of widespread disruptions to work and industrial activities across the continent. The UK's National Grid has warned that rotating blackouts could happen this winter in the extreme case of gas shortages and reduce electricity imports from Europe. This could cause widespread disruption in UK factories and businesses. Germany, which is the Eurozone's economic powerhouse, has not ruled out that it will eventually consider gas rationing following import disruptions from Russia.
Wir werden in diesem Jahr einen Rückgang gegenüber der Projektion von April des Wirtschaftswachstums haben. Wir prognostizieren jetzt im Herbst noch ein Wachstum von 1,4%, aber im April diesen Jahres haben wir noch 2,2% vorhergesagt. Für das nächste Jahr sind wir dann mit minus 0,4%, also einem negativen Wachstum, in einer Rezession.
We will come forward as a commission in the next 2 weeks with proposals to tame the energy prices and to tame the electricity prices. The aim is to reduce the price to a certain level without endangering security of supply.
The move could trigger shutdowns across factories in the country and have a far-reaching impact across all sectors, from nappies to medicine. The IMF has warned that the global economy is facing a downturn, with the worst yet to come, as the war in Ukraine is pushing prices higher around the globe.
When it comes to the British economy, it has obviously gotten out of control. Let's see what has actually happened and what is the state of the UK economy. First, the UK government's £45 billion package of tax cuts has resulted in the pound sinking, interest rates rising, and the Bank of England intervening in an extraordinary way to prevent an economic collapse. The International Monetary Fund, which is usually meant to step in to ensure stability in middle and low-income countries, made a rare and critical statement on the danger of the government plan.
We do need central banks to act decisively. Why? Because inflation is very stubborn. We see now secondary impact of energy and food prices into core inflation in many countries. And if it is not stopped in its steps, it is bad for growth and it is very bad for poor people.
What Truss's mini-budget presented was terrible news for the less privileged, because it widened the inequality gap in the UK, which was pretty bad to begin with. Economic policies that increase inequality and make the bulk of the population poorer is not a good thing. This is true not just for the lowest earners, but for most of the population, including middle-class families. For example, rising interest rates have increased mortgages. This is while real wages are falling. This will lead to more expensive and increasingly unaffordable housing. And that is just one example of how people across the board who have mortgages will be affected, setting off a chain of events that threatens people's housing. The cost of expensive mortgages are passed on to both homeowners and renters in the form of higher mortgage payments and higher rents. Almost 2.5 million people are behind or constantly struggling to pay their rent, an increase of 45% since April 2022. Many do not realize the food situation in the UK and how vulnerable that is. But the UK, like many other countries, is dealing with food inflation as well. The UK imports more than 50% of its food. As the pound falls against the other currencies, the prices of food will eventually increase even further. Fruits, vegetables, wheat, rice, pasta, and protein sources will grow more expensive. Low-income households will be forced to buy the cheapest products, food that is ultra-processed and detrimental to their health, while middle-class households will have an increasing share of their income taken over by weekly shopping bills. Child hunger has also been increasing in Britain. Some parents have been unable to provide their kids with warm meals and even lunchboxes. Why would they go down this route? We can debate whether Prime Minister Liz Truss is incompetent for not anticipating the market's reaction, cruel in not caring what this does to the well-being of the population, or corrupt in helping the super rich profit from the pound's plummet. That does it for this edition of the program.
As mentioned in the beginning of the program, the UK Finance Minister Hunt actually came out and made an announcement reversing and tearing up almost all parts of Prime Minister Liz Truss's proposed tax cuts. Now, is that a government in disarray or what? But such is the state of many European governments who are scrambling to keep their economies together. And they better do it fast because people are rising against them, a phenomenon that is now occurring at a faster pace in Europe. That is for this edition of the program. It was great having you with us. We do appreciate it. Fomi Kabatagwe and the entire team is goodbye until the next program.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
British Prime Minister Liz Truss finally resigned, as experts had predicted her collapse days and even weeks before. Liz Truss's legacy for Britain was a tanking pound, soaring inflation, and a seemingly inevitable recession. World media websites have analyzed this issue and economic challenges that face Britain. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Common Dreams website wrote, "It would take longer to properly account for all the myriad ways Liz Truss leaves Britain worse off than when she entered office, than the amount of time she spent inside Number 10. Her brief tenure has been characterized by an exhilarantly rapid pace of record-breaking, from establishing an unprecedented Labour lead in the polls to presiding over the highest rates of inflation in 40 years, to driving the pound down to its lowest ever level against the dollar, and culminating in her resignation as the shortest-serving prime minister in UK history. The story of the Free Enterprise Group, FEG, the neo-Thatcherite Tory faction founded by Liz Truss in 2011 and closely associated with Tufton Street think tanks such as Institute for Economic Affairs, IEA, makes for satisfying Skander fraud. A decade after a gaggle of new elected Tory MPs, among them Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng, co-authored Britannia Unchained, which outlined the FEG's vision for the country. The group's internal politicking saw them slowly ascend to the head of the table. 12 long-time supporters of FEG would occupy cabinet positions in Truss's government, with Kwarteng, Thérèse Coffey and Nadim Zavi rewarded with some of the choices senior roles. The head of IEA's public policy openly and gleefully posted about dictating the political course. At last, it was time for them to realize the hyper-neoliberal Britain they had dreamed about for so long, one which could boast the bare minimum in taxation, regulation and public spending. Their vision promptly dissolved on contact with reality, immediately taking the economy and requiring a humiliating and abrupt halt to the experiment after all of 44 days. Their hubris might make for an enjoyable bit of political theatre, but beyond the spectacle, the consequences of Truss' fleeting premiership cannot be neatly undone. Though the pound began to rally against the dollar almost instantly after her resignation, the damage caused by Trussonomics, which led to a collapse in gilt government prices, have only thrown fuel on the raging fire of the cost of living crisis. Britain is by no means alone in facing such crises, particularly in the wake of various economic and supply chain shocks resulting from the Russia-Ukraine crisis. But economists have begun to refer to the upshot of Truss' response as a moron risk premium, the country becoming a cautionary tale in how to exacerbate an already perilous economic situation. The Bank of England had to pledge that it was prepared to spend up to £5 billion a day over 13 days in an attempt to prevent various pension funds from going under. It is now expected to raise interest rates from 25 tenths percent to 5% by early 2023, with the Resolution Foundation anticipating that 5 million households could be facing an average mortgage bill increase of £5,100 annually. Many homeowners may be forced to sell up, but since lenders responded to the mini-budget by withdrawing 1,700 products, roughly 40% of the market, before reintroducing 900 of them at far higher prices, eligible buyers might be in much shorter supply. As well as exposing mortgage owners to a much higher risk of defaulting, the bank has already warned of increases in the coming months. This could have a severe short-term effects on renters too, should these rising costs be passed on by landlords. The knock-on effect of a sharp increase in tenants and homeowners being unable to afford rent and mortgages, particularly as other living costs simultaneously soar in tandem, has the potential to not only lead to a large spike in homelessness, but to collapse the property market, a market with which many pension funds are also inextricably linked. There is a potential that interest rates might not be raised in line with market expectations to avoid such a scenario, but this carries a risk of higher inflation, which has already climbed to 10.1% under Truss, the highest in 40 years. Annual food prices have risen by almost 15%, the highest rise since 1980, which has certainly not been helped by the weakening of the pound, leading to significantly increased import costs. The true impact of a spiraling energy cost hasn't been truly felt yet, given British are only in October and winter hasn't really drawn in. Consumers being battered on numerous fronts of essential costs, including housing, fuel, food, are likely to make spending cutbacks, meaning many employers could see a significant downturn in business, which when combined with their own increases in energy and supply costs, might have disastrous consequences for their staff, whether in depressed wages or cutbacks. Losses in earnings beget losses in spending power begets more losses in earnings. Truss' growth plan ostensibly sought to prevent a recession, but looks only to have made one more inevitable and more sharply felt. It would be unfair to lay blame for all of these scenarios squarely at the feet of Liz Truss. She is a symptom rather than a direct cause of current situation, and of an ideology that has for decades been busy organizing the economy in such a precarious way for the benefit of all those she last month sought to hand tax cuts to. In just 44 days, Truss has given the British all of a glimpse of what plus 40-year political project could look like if allowed to be taken to its logical conclusion.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith based on understanding. Saturday, the 4th of Ramadan, 1394, 21st of September, 1974. There is a story about the leaders of one of the communist nations of the Eastern Bloc, who professed atheism and utterly rejected any culture or philosophy that was not based on materialism. This story takes place shortly after the Indian independence. In order to win the hearts of the massed millions of Indians who have just won their independence, these leaders visit India. Some of the most important Muslim leaders were Maulana Shah Mahmud Dehlawi, Maulana Mahmud al-Hasan, Maulana Abul Kalam Azad, Maulana Muhammad Ali, and Maulana Shaukat Ali. The term Maulana amongst Indian Muslims at the time is roughly equivalent to our term Ayatollah. Therefore, these Muslim scholars were amongst the major leaders of the Indian independence movement. There were also Hindu figures such as Mahatma Gandhi, and figures belonging to the Jain faith were also a part of it. Coming back to Tilak, he was a Hindu monk, although perhaps monk is not the proper term, but in any case, he was a Hindu religious leader and an amazing figure. He really was quite a remarkable person, although he died while the struggle was ongoing and did not live to see a free India. However, 30 years, 40 years after his death, his followers saw his vision for a free India realized and wore the Tilak mark to memorialize him. This mark is a religious symbol with spiritual and metaphysical significance. And Tilak himself was, for the Hindus, a religious leader.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
In any case, when these communist leaders who espoused atheism and materialism went to India, in order to win people over to their cause, they put the Tilak mark on their heads. In other words, they wanted to say, yes, us too, we believe the same as you. This even though their own words and beliefs contradicted this statement. Those political leaders who are removed from spiritual, religious or divine responsibilities are like this. But the prophets of Allah believed in whatever they spoke with the totality of their being. Whatever they called people towards, they were rushing towards it already. It means nothing if I lay down at the bottom of a mountain, dying of thirst, and tell you there is a cool fresh water to be had on the top of this mountain. Quick, go and get it. Hurry, I'll be waiting here. You would all be right to tell me, if what you're saying is true, if you really knew there was a spring atop this mountain, when you yourself are dying of thirst, you would have gone yourself. You must be lying, for you yourself do not believe what you have said. Therefore, divine leaders must, before anyone else, like trailblazers with the banner in their hands, set out on the path, stand tall and lead the way for others to follow.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me from all.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
in the limelight.
Former British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has landed in Britain after cutting short a vacation in the Caribbean. He's expected to launch a comeback campaign to succeed his successor, Liz Truss. However, senior Tories are saying Boris Johnson's return as Prime Minister would risk the Conservative Party's death. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. British newspaper The Financial Times has more on this story. Investors and some Conservative MPs took fright on Friday, 21st of October, as Boris Johnson considered running for a second stint as UK Prime Minister, with warnings that he risked triggering further political and economic chaos. Boris Johnson's allies are scrambling to secure the 100 nominations needed from Tory MPs to enter Monday's ballot to replace Liz Truss, who resigned on Thursday after only 6 weeks in power. Johnson, who was forced to quit as Tory leader in July after criticism of his personal conduct, could square up against his former Chancellor and rival Rishi Sunak, risking further Tory infighting. Rishi Sunak became the first leadership candidate to cross the 100th threshold and onto the ballot paper on Friday evening, one of his allies said. Tobias Elwood wrote on Twitter that he was honoured to be the 100th Tory MP to support the former Chancellor, Sunak. Lord William Hague, the former Conservative leader, said a Boris Johnson comeback was the worst idea he had heard in the past 46 years as a party member, telling the Times Radio that it would put the party into a death spiral. The volatility in gilt yields on Friday came ahead of the third credit rating agency Moody's changing the UK's outlook to negative from stable. Reaffirming the AA3 rating, the agency lowered the outlook, citing heightened unpredictability in policymaking and the risk of higher government borrowing costs. Jane Foley, head of currency strategy at Rabobank, said Johnson's previous time in office had been characterised by a lack of leadership from a government very distracted by one scandal after another, and the chance that that could come back is not going to be welcomed by the markets. A 10-year gilt yield rose 0.22 percentage points to 4.13% on Friday, reflecting a fall in price, before edging back to 4.06%. The pound fell as much as 1.4% against the US dollar before recovering its losses. Simon French, economist at Panmure Gordon, said the United Kingdom would benefit from a dullness dividend if the party picked Rishi Sunak to replace Liz Truss. Sunak's allies expect him to keep Jeremy Hunt as his chancellor. He predicted that a team of Sunak and Hunt would close the spread between UK gilts and other sovereign debt held by other G7 countries by 50 basis points, which would equate to a £7 billion reduction in the 2026-2027 fiscal gap. Rishi Sunak quit as Boris Johnson's chancellor back in July, claiming his former boss was unable to take tough fiscal decisions. "Our people know that if something is too good to be true, it is not true," he said in his resignation letter. Berenberg analysts said there were greater market risks from a Johnson government, and that either Sunak or Penny Mordaunt, the leader of the House of Commons, who declared her candidacy on Friday, would probably preside over a sensible, predictable centre-right administration. In a note to clients, the bank added, "Given that a majority of Conservative MPs probably do not want Boris Johnson as their leader, the prospects of mass resignations and a further descent into chaos would loom large." Allies of Boris Johnson say they have privately approached Rishi Sunak to join forces in an attempt to present a united front and that any administration would be fiscally responsible. British newspaper The Observer has more on this story. Senior Tories are engaged in a frantic campaign to stop Boris Johnson staging a dramatic return to No. 10 Downing Street, with claims he would cause further economic damage and risk the end of the Conservative Party. Boris Johnson's team was claiming on Saturday night that he had privately secured the support of 100 MPs necessary to enter the race, despite only 55 backing him in public. The assertion was immediately disputed by MPs and rival leadership campaign sources. Boris Johnson released a photo of himself lobbying an MP on the phone, but his allies on Saturday night could not confirm he would officially enter the contest to win back the leadership he was deposed from just a few months ago. In another day of high political drama in the race to succeed Liz Truss as Prime Minister, supporters of frontrunner Rishi Sunak were attempting to secure support from MPs so overwhelming that Johnson will be forced to drop out of the race. They believe a final indicative vote among MPs overwhelmingly backing Sunak would send a message to members not to lumber them with another leader they do not support. The two frontrunners held talks on Saturday night, 22nd of October, as they approached Monday's 2 p.m. deadline for nominations, and while neither camp disclosed the content, it is understood that Boris Johnson was proposing a deal which he claimed would avoid a divisive battle within the Conservative Party. Former cabinet ministers backing Rishi Sunak said a comeback for Johnson would also unsettle the financial markets, increasing the risk of further sharp rises in interest rates by the Bank of England within days. One former cabinet colleague of Johnson said desperate efforts were underway to rally support behind Rishi Sunak, not least because he would symbolise stability to the financial markets and reduce the chances of interest rates and mortgages rising further. He said the medium-term fiscal plan due to be announced by Chancellor Jeremy Hunt on 31st of October would be vital and must not be compromised by Boris Johnson's return. It will then be a question of whether Johnson puts his narcissism above the interests of the country, said a senior source. A big win for Sunak will put pressure on Johnson. Kemi Badenoch, seen as a future leader, provided Rishi Sunak with a big boost by backing him. Meanwhile, there were claims that a hardcore group of about a dozen MPs opposed to Boris Johnson's return would resign the whip should he take over again. Other Tory MPs said Johnson would struggle to get any laws through Parliament should he return, given the strength of feeling against him. Tory MP Roger Gale revealed on Saturday that he would resign the Tory whip if Boris Johnson became Prime Minister once again. Another Tory MP said they would consider their place in the party should Johnson return, warning it was the one outcome that risked precipitating an early election and could spell the end of the Conservative Party should MPs begin to split away. Several Tories made clear that the Privileges Committee investigation into whether Boris Johnson misled the House of Commons over Partygate made it impossible to accept him as leader. Some said they would back an election rather than vote for an attempt to spare Johnson from the inquiry. Former Daily Telegraph editor Charles Moore, who is a friend of Boris Johnson, also urged him not to stand, saying it was too early to return and that Sunak had been proven right about unfunded tax cuts. Charles Moore urged Johnson to sit this one out.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Puraza, London.
Russia, Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
On Saturday, 45-year-old Giorgia Meloni took an oath as Italy's prime minister before President Sergio Mattarella. Meloni, the country's first woman to become premier, is one of the founders and the current leader of the far-right-leaning party Brothers of Italy, the political force that spearheaded a right-wing coalition to victory in last month's general election. Besides bringing some political stability to Italy, which has seen 68 governments in its 74 years of history as a republic, Meloni will have to face a series of daunting challenges, including a looming recession, protecting Italians from surging energy bills, and reassuring the establishment about her Atlanticist and anti-Putin alignment.
Delegates from our coalition met with President Mattarella, and they agreed over the fact that there are many emergencies at national and international level, and quick answers are needed.
Italy's new Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni, says her government will follow the line of NATO and the Western Alliance. Also, the new Foreign Minister, former European Parliament President Antonio Tajani, has repeatedly said he will be fully supportive of Kiev. Meloni's two main allies, media magnate Silvio Berlusconi and Matteo Salvini, are long-time admirers of Russian President Vladimir Putin. Earlier this week, a video portraying Berlusconi saying that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky should be held accountable for the conflict in Ukraine caused a stir in the political arena. Italians are hoping the new government will work for a peaceful resolution to the conflict in Ukraine.
We must do all we can to stop the war through negotiations and dialogue, and the new government must help Italians to pay energy bills. We are on our knees.
We are confident that the new government will do good. Its biggest challenge will be easing the impact of soaring energy bills on Italians.
Meloni is expected to lay out her political priorities next week when she faces confidence votes at the parliament that will confirm or not that she holds a majority. Max Civili, Rome.
A refugee camp somewhere in the Luhansk region of Donbass. The civilians here are Russian speakers who fled recent Ukrainian advances not far to the west.
Now, the people here won't speak to me on camera. They are simply too scared. I've also been told not to give the exact location of this site or even the town that we're in fear that the Ukrainians might target the center with artillery strikes.
This woman, sobbing into her hands, tells me she has family in Ukrainian territory. They also tell me that they are scared to be put on Telegram channels like this, called Collaborators of Luhansk. It posts the photos and details of anyone accused of working with the Russians. It includes teachers and nurses. Along the battle lines, pro-Ukrainians generally flee west, pro-Russians flee east. The ethnic boundaries of this once mixed country are being defined more clearly.
While this is a proxy war between Russia and NATO, it is also, at its root, a civil war between Ukrainian nationalists and its Russian-speaking minority, who are mainly situated in the east and the south of the country. The fact of the matter is, there is a strong likelihood, even a probability, that if Ukraine was to ever take back these four regions, there would be ethnic cleansing of the Russian-speaking population. The people here in Donbass say that this attempted ethnic cleansing by the Ukrainian army has been going on for the last 8 years.
While Russia and NATO continue to pursue their objectives on the battlefield, there is increasingly a peace to be made and new borders drawn if the views of the people living here were listened to. Johnny Miller, Donbass.
People from all walks of life rallied in the Gaza Strip following the Friday prayer in solidarity with Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque. Protesters shouted slogans decrying the Israeli crimes in Al-Quds and in the occupied West Bank. In recent days, extremist Jewish settlers, backed by Israeli forces, have been violating the sanctity of Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Al-Quds. Israeli attacks usually increase during Jewish holidays. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, which organized